Welcome to the Gurr and Fangirl podcast, a podcast where we discuss pop culture and fandom. Each episode, we talk with celebrities, fans, and creators about their work in the media that inspires them. Now here's your host, the creator of the Squee Project, filmmaker, fangirl, and feminist, Hansi Oppenheimer.
It's Hansi, and today I'm talking with Susan Hurwitz-Arnesen. She's co-executive producer and writer on two of my favorite shows, The Tick and Preacher. It was really interesting to hear about what goes on in the writer's room on these two shows, to discuss creating strong women characters, what it's like to work with Ben Edlund, and we even have some tips for ways fans can help save The Tick. So here we go.
Sounds good.
Thanks for taking the time. I appreciate it.
Oh, no worries. I'm sort of chilling right now in between stuff, so it's good to be able to talk to people about the shows and what's going on.
Yeah, I'm sure, because when you're working, you're probably, that's your life, and there's not a lot of chance to get out there and talk about it.
Exactly.
So I saw that your MFA is in screenwriting, and then you're also, co-executive producer on both Tick and Preacher at this point, or
correct? Yep.
Okay.
Well,
so how?
Yes.
So how is that juggling those two?
The timing was really good. I finished up on Tick back last August. And around then was approached, my agents came at me with Preacher. And originally, we didn't know what was going to happen with The Tick. And both Preacher and Tick are Sony shows, Sony Studios. So there was some hesitation by Amazon and Sony to let me go do Preacher once I got the job. But finally, we sort of pushed saying, because Amazon, we weren't airing. We knew we weren't airing to April, and that sort of the timing could work. So I started on Preacher in September after stopping Tick in August. And now I'm done on Preacher and was hoping to go straight back for season 3 of Tick. The timing would have been great. But then, of course, Amazon decided not to go forward with the show. So
Which wasn't hard.
I know. I see a lot online, and I think it's very difficult for us because, the promotion for the show didn't seem to be out there. I'm seeing a lot of comments on like Reddit and Twitter about people who didn't even know we were back for the second season. So, I don't know what the reasons are. I haven't been privy to the conversations, but there is a sense from me, and this is my own personal opinion, that, there was a change in management at Amazon and we were part of the old pack. So I'm not sure that we were ever where they wanted to see the network go, or if we fit into their vision, or they didn't get us, or I don't know. But it was really disappointing, I especially considering our reviews and how well season 2 turned out. Very disappointing because it's sort of my dream job. It was definitely heartbreaking.
And every version of The Tick has been wonderful and different. And I've loved them all. When I interviewed Ben Edlund at New York Comic Con last year, he's like, "Well, I'm basically a one-trick pony," and which is so not true at all. But I understand, in terms of he has this one obsession with this story, and he's just going to keep finding ways to tell it. I love this version of it.
Yeah, me too. I think it's, you create something so iconic when you're young, and you it's like Superman's still around, Batman's still around, you're still telling those stories, and those were created in the 30s. So, Ben created this iconic, incredible character in this batshit kind of world. And, of course, as he gets older and he matures as a writer and as a storyteller and as a human being, that character gets filtered through that. And each iteration's been as brilliant as it has because Ben, who is the Tick and created the Tick, has driven them creatively. He just has a lot to still say with the character. So it just sucks.
It's really interesting how the Tick has it always seems to be reflective of the times for each version. I thought this last version on the two seasons were really interesting in terms of talking about what was happening politically. I mean, some of it was so on the nose, big stumbling.
We were a little ahead of what was happening.
You nailed it.
I think it's hard to, I think any show, but specifically a show where you have a character that's about love, to not reflect what's happening in a world that seems to be filling with so much darkness. You know, it's really hard not to have what you're experiencing as a writer and as a person filter into your world, especially when you're talking about a character who believes in love and justice and being a hero. So he's a bright little sunny blue spot in a kind of a dark place, including where, you know, hero shows seem to have been going, and this dark, grim view of the world. But the Tick was sort of, yes, the world can be grim, but we don't have to be grim within it. We can choose love. And so it was definitely a really good time for the show.
I was just rewatching, you might have saw my Twitter, I was just rewatching Blood and Cake, and it's so wonderful and so funny. And I love, you know, when Arthur, you know, when Dangerfoot says, "I love you, Arthur," and Arthur's like, "I love you too." And it's this really touching moment that's just ridiculous.
I know, it's
still so meaningful.
It's, you know, there's a story behind that episode. I was originally supposed to write the second episode of the season to pair with Ben's first episode of the season. And then my best friend was diagnosed with lung cancer and got extremely sick very fast, and with pneumonia and the flu, didn't even get to really deal with the cancer and passed away. I had to not write that episode because I just wasn't present as much as I was dealing with being in the hospital and sort of the aftermath of her passing. And so when I came back and we started discussing the episode I was now going to write, episode 4, we decided we were sort of wanted to stay on our sets, do something bodily. And of course, our greatest set to bottle people in is Danger Boat. So it all sort of grew organically from, and so it all sort of grew organically from wanting to do a bottle episode. Ben and I had talked before about a little bit of Danger Boat's backstory, just a bit, you know, why he went rogue. Did he have a partner before Overkill? And sort of all these things came together, excuse me, in such a great way. And then to be able to sort of channel my grief and my feelings about grief and loss through Danger Boat and Arthur, and sort of this organic combining of storytelling and weirdness and my truth. I think it's what we try to do on the Tick, you know, it's real heart with this crazy fucking characters and world. And it came together great. We actually did it at the table read, an early version of it. And it's so crazy to you get really upset. And then you remember this is a gay sentient boat in love with a CPA in a moth suit. And then sort of the crazy of it lightens it, but it doesn't make it feel less real. And I think that's sort of, you know, the power of that episode, but more importantly, the power of the world that Ben created with the Tick, and sort of what we strive to do on the show, which is we want you to feel about these characters, even if, you know, their arms stretch far, or it's a woman who shoots electricity from their fingers. There's real emotion and real truth to our characters in this insane Technicolor world.
It's true. They're absolutely as and as goofy as it gets, it's still you really care about, you know, their arcs. And I love Overkill and Dots' relationship. That's
Do
you guys have an official ship name for them?
You know, people have called them Overdot or Dotkill.
Right.
It's just Overkill. And this season, I started calling her, and then it sort of got picked up that she was Danger Dot, because that's she's wearing the black and she's got the darker makeup and Danger Dot. It's Overkill and Danger Dot. And it just seemed like weird little
cartoon
combo name. So yeah, they're terrific together, and Val and Scott, who play the characters, have a great chemistry as people too. So I think they have fun being together, and I think it really comes through in the scenes with their characters.
Yeah, I was excited about the season. I had interviewed Valerie and my brain's freezing.
Stop.
But the one who plays Ms. Lynn. So ladies were both talking about like how, you know, this season, because this was in October, so that when this season aired, you'd get to see them really, like, they'd really have like strong arcs as women. And you definitely did that with this season.
Yeah, it was really important to Bannon, and I was really annoying in the writer's room a lot, especially for, I mean, the thing about Miss Lint is we found her story arc early in the season, and sort of knew what we wanted to do. We originally wanted to bring the terror back for season two, but our budget was cut by quite a bit for the second season, and we just couldn't. Which story-wise, it just didn't make sense for us. And financially, we just couldn't do Jackie again. And for now, you know, to really pay for him to be a part of the show, we wanted it to be much bigger than what we had room for in this season. So Yara's story, once we figured out we weren't going to have the terror back, she sort of, her story, her arc for the season became clear relatively fast. But Dot, we struggled with a bit. And it's finding a place with her in these characters for her to stand on her own became very important to both Ben and I and the rest of the writer's room. So I was constantly in the writer's room going, yeah, but that's not Dot's story. That's Dot being attached to Arthur's story. But wait, no, that's not Dot's story. That's Dot being attached to somebody else's story. Like, what's Dot's story?
That's so amazing you did that.
Well, she's beyond the fact that she's our female lead. She's, you know, she's number three on our call sheet. These are all important things. Beyond the fact that it's, you know, one of the coolest things about her character for me is, I mean, you know, I come from a divorced family, and it's always fascinated to me. Sorry to my brother for bringing this to the public, but we each reacted very differently to our parents' divorce, right? So I was like, oh, I don't know if I ever want to get married. And my brother's like, I'm going to do it young and I'm going to do it right. You know, so we had different, and that always resonated for Arthur and Dot for me, that two siblings that experienced trauma from their own perspectives, but as a family, like, how does that affect them differently? And that was really interesting, I think, to me, to Ben, about you know, the trauma of Dot's always taking care of people because she had to. Now that Arthur can take care of himself and her mom is stepping up more, does that leave Dot with having to take care of Dot? And so what has she been pushing down and not dealing with all these years where she's taking care of other people and not herself? So it was really interesting and fun to explore that side of Dot, that there was trauma. And that was finally rearing its head, and that maybe taking care of everybody, the sort of, you know, being an EMT sort of way, maybe there's other ways to take care of people that would satisfy and answer her trauma.
And just like having her sort of like struggle with, you know, coming into her own power and her own abilities. And, you know, you don't get to see that often with women. And I'm so glad to know that, you know, you fought in the writer's room for a character that, you know, it wasn't, you know, someone's sister, someone's mother, someone's girlfriend. It was Dot.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not a hard fight. Ben was 100% on board. And, you know, it was his goal, too, that every female character, including Joan, you know, got to shine this season. We, you know, first season, it's hard because it's a buddy comedy at its core. You know, it's Chick and Arthur. And so by the way the pilot was set up, there were certain places we had to go with Tick and Arthur. But second season, we were wide open to sort of embrace and fill out these female characters. And it was important from the beginning of the season to Ben to do that. So it was never a hard fight. The hard fight was finding the right answers. You know, like, well, no, that doesn't really work. No, well, maybe that. No, no, no. So it was finding the right thing for her was something that felt true to her was the harder part of it.
But I think, you know, as someone who spends a lot of time in fandom culture, I think you know, it's nice for us fans to know that those discussions are being had, because, you know, some of the fandoms I participate in have been very frustrated by the way, you know, women characters have been treated on shows. And, you know, we tweet and we write about it, but, you know, we also understand, you know, some of us understand, some of us don't. You know, you have constraints. You know, it's not always just, you know, what the writers want to do. And, you know, they can't always please the fans. You know, they have other obligations in terms of the characters.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, the cool thing about Dot is, you know, when you look at the history of the Tick, and I've been a huge fan since the comics and every, you know, every other iteration. When you look at the history of Dot, she was sort of like this annoying sister that was just there to take on, you know, Arthur's problems. And in this day and age, we had the opportunity to redefine her and redraw her and recreate her. And that was exciting to sort of take this sort of almost side character who, you know, could be annoying in the cartoon and really make her somebody that people looked up to. And that was a really, to add to the Tick legacy with that was felt pretty great. And, you know, there are things we have to answer, but it helps a lot when your showrunner and the creator of the cartoon is one of the people driving to do that, for sure. But yeah, we definitely have those conversations in the writer's room, you know, Preacher 2, you know, what's Tulip's story,
oh,
you know,
man,
what's Jesse's story, what's, you know, all of
yeah.
them. Right.
I
just
love
as important there that they each have individual ones.
I love
I'm sorry,
what Preacher's done with Tulip. No, that's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's you know, when I was, you know, I mean, as I may have spoken to you when we tweeted back and forth, I was friends with Steve Dillon, and, you know, when the comic books came out, and I actually, I mean, I love both, but I think Tulip is so much better in the show. I mean, I love how fleshed out she
is,
badass she is.
I honestly, like, I didn't love the comic. I read some of them back in the day when they came out, but when I got the job on Preacher, when we were negotiating for me to actually go to Preacher, I read all of them. And I really, like, and I'd been a fan of the show, so I had seen, you know, at the time, the third season was airing. So I was watching the third season, and I was reading the comics, and I was like, man, I really, I do not like this Tulip as much. And the amount of times a poor girl gets drugged or left sleeping it off or whatever while everybody else goes off to do stuff, specifically Jesse, is kind
in
of hilarious.
In the novels or not in the show, right?
Yeah, in the graphic. No, not in the show. But we talk about it. We've talked about it in the writer's room at the show about, well, it's just jokingly. Well, we could always just drug her and leave her at the motel. You know, like, we just joking because that's what, you know. And it was a different time. It was the 90s. It was whatever.
Yeah,
and,
it was a
she was still
time.
Pretty kick-ass in the comics. But, the version of Tulip that Sam created is she's pretty exceptional, pretty
oh man, like from her introduction, you know, where, you know, let's do crafts.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, she's not only like, you know, badass driver and assassin, but like really kind to kids and like fun to hang out with.
She's still she's like, yeah, I'm sort of a child with a gun. A little bit on certain levels emotionally.
And I can build a bazooka
she's
out of
great.
Random household items.
The MacGyver thing also is great. She's fantastic. She's fantastic. And that they cast Ruth, who, you know, we both know that in the comics she was this big boobed, blonde haired, you know, kind of bimbo-y chick. But to have made the call to cast Ruth, who's brilliant, and brings so much of that combo of hardness and vulnerability that really
absolutely.
Makes Tulip, I think, sing in the series versus the comics. Really just a great, amazing choice in casting.
And my favorite in the comic book, well, too, was always either Cassidy or, you know, the Saint of Killers. Those were always my two favorites in the comics. And those, I think, you know, were
great.
Exactly what I imagined them to be. So that, you know, they nailed it on the casting and the writing for that.
Yeah,
but,
absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of really interesting women characters on Preacher. I mean, having Betty Buckley there last season was, that was crazy.
Yeah, and Julianne Emery continues to just be outstanding as Featherstone. But yeah, there's definitely been some really strong, great female characters on that show. Really memorable.
So do you have a favorite character on both shows, or whoever you're writing
really
at the moment?
Really hard. It varies, you know. I will always have on Tick, like, Dot's going to have a huge special place in my heart. I love that character. I love her. I love who she's become. I love Overkill because all you have to do is write angry. Just whatever you want to say. Just find a really angry way to say it, and there's your Overkill dialogue.
True.
Which is so much fun. And then
of vulnerability peeked out in between the anger.
Yeah, which
and then he's all
the
embarrassed
me
about
laugh.
It afterwards.
Yeah, because I'm not really embarrassed. Because like, well, kind of, but no. Yeah, he's great. Those are probably my two. Tick is probably he's hard to write for because he's so lyrical in how he speaks, such weirdly. I call it Tickensian in how he speaks. but he's fun too. I have to be honest. It's like I loved working on Preacher. It was brilliant. I love the show. I'm so proud that I got the chance to be with it. It pushed me in ways as a writer that were painful, but great. But Tick is one of the loves of my life, and it's there's not a part or a character that I don't dig. I love writing for Lint. I really, honestly, just everything about that show brings me joy. And then for Preacher, God, you know, obviously Tulip is a blast to write for. Hair Star, Hitler.
Sure.
I mean, as a Jewish girl from New Jersey to sort of write for Hitler is a strange thing. This season, you know, you get a little more Jesus. I don't think that's too much of a spoiler. And so just to like, yeah, there's these, I found Tick also has this too, but it's a different kind of surreal than Preacher, where suddenly you're writing dialogue for Hitler or for Jesus or God. And you're like, what is happening? Versus Tick, where your moments are like, well, so, you know, when Lobster Hercules and her babies, and then you realize you're talking about a giant lobster and lobster baby, like there's just weird. I do a weird thing for a living, and I'm very lucky, but you do have moments where you're like, ah, this is just stupid. This is just so dumb.
I love that they had lobster Hercules. There were like rubber bands on her claws when she was in captivity.
Yeah. You know, Ben, I don't know if many people know this. Ben is from Massachusetts, but he's from by the cranberry bogs, and he hates seafood. Does not like seafood. and he just came in with this idea of a creature named Lobstercules. And then it evolved to, you know, it's a woman and she's being this, and then she has babies, and then, you know, giving Tick and Arthur a chance to parent together and sort of show that bond. That all came
and
from
then
it.
Bringing
came in one
Joan
day, like,
in to help.
Yeah. Right. which was so great because we really like, you know, Joan was somebody we really wanted to fill out. You know, we still have a backstory for Walter we've never been able to tell about why he's obsessed with feet. We have a story for it. I won't ever spill stuff until I'm told I'm allowed. But Joan was like, who is Joan? And it really gave us a chance to touch on the fact that after her husband was killed, and it's so funny you talk about these things, they're like, they're really serious story points, but we turn them. You know, who is Joan after her husband was killed and she was left to raise these two children, her trauma, and how she sort of defaulted as a mom, you know, to, you know, doctors for throw money at the problem, you know, doctors for Arthur and whatever, and then letting her daughter take over and those things. So who is Joan now that she realizes, who her son really is, that she did sort of not fully mother them after their father died. So who is she, and how does she not make amends, but how does she fully bring her family back into her fold, right, as a mom and as somebody who wants family. And so giving her a chance to sort of be a grandmother.
Right, exactly.
And use those grandkids to heal her relationships with her children felt really good. It just happens they were lobsters.
Well, that totally makes sense in context. But, yeah, it absolutely was like the grandmother coming over and the parents are like, we don't know what to do. The kid's crying. We can't stop. And the grandmother's like, here, let me show you how this works.
Yep. Right. And through that bond, you're able to talk to your children about your failings as a parent now that they're trying to parent, right? So now that you have this parenting thing in common, maybe you'll both get each other more. And so that definitely, I think, helped us to round out Joan and to bring her into specifically Arthur and Tick into their lives more.
So I have a question about the technical end for you.
Sure.
Both those shows have very, very specific like language, and in particularly, you know, Ben Edlund, of course, right? So how hard is that for you to sort of like get into that, you know, or is it just, you know, when you're writing, you're just in that frame of mind and the words come? I mean, is it difficult?
No, they're both incredibly, you know, we found with the ticket was much easier for me, partially because some of the characters we were creating, right? So I was a part of the show from the get-go, from the first season. So, you know, as we formed Dot, as we formed Overkill, as these characters grew, I was part of them. So I sort of, you know, I learned their voices. Tick will always be hard because he's so uniquely Ben. And no matter who writes the Tick, Ben always has to go through the Tick and, you know, put it through his brain and spit the words back out. I mean, you can get really close and he'll keep a ton of what you write, but there's still like, there's flourishes, there's things that are so specifically Ben and you want that. You need that. That's his,
absolutely,
one of his many, many gifts. And so, but it's a very difficult show to write for, in that it's such a mixture of heart, funny. It writes like a drama, but it's a half hour, but it's ridiculous. So it's its own unique beast. There's no other show out there like it. Tonally, it sort of walks a crazy line. And the interesting thing is that Preacher does the exact same thing. I mean, they're very different lines, but there's a similarity in terms of a strange tone that mixes action, violence, romance, comedy, all these things that make it incredibly difficult to write for. And so the Tick for me was a little, not easier, but I was able to be there and acclimate as the characters' voices started to be developed. Preacher was very hard for me to come in on the fourth season, even though I'd watched it all.
Sure.
And write. It was very intimidating. The level of the writing, just like on the Tick, but the level of the writing is exceptional. So part of it is not only is it a hard show tonally, as a writer, it's intimidating because you don't want to fuck it up.
Right.
So they were two very difficult shows to work for, but I, you know, really like in terms of pushing me as a writer, great experiences, both just tremendous experiences. It's changed how I write and who I am as a writer for sure. Both have, and how I tell stories now. Definitely.
That's amazing. Well, that's how it should be, right? I mean, if you're involved in this creative process, it should, you know, it goes both ways. You create, but it also makes, you know, you who you are, the, you know, the process, you know, you learn and grow from it.
It's really, I mean, it's hard to continually be pushed, you know. I get like, oh, to be on something that's a little more comfortable where I can do my job and it's, you know, I can write this, but to not be pushed, it's terrifying, it's hard, but it's, gosh, the benefits are great. To my garbage men, sorry, going by.
No, that's okay.
You
have the opportunity to work on shows that are so unique and so creative. I mean, there's nothing else like them.
I can't go back. You know, I come from sitcom background. I originally started on South Park for 6 years, so I was already sort of acclimated to creators who were brilliant and intimidating. But you know, 6 years in South Park, which was, you know, obviously its own unique thing, and with exceptional writing and storytelling and well-known characters. And then I did some years on some other shows, sitcoms, things like that. And I don't want to go back to that. I want to stay sort of on the trajectory I'm on with Tick and Preacher, to those sort of batshit shows that are difficult to write and care about character and story, all while still being funny and outrageous and dark and weird. That's sort of where I'd like to keep going, if they're out there.
I've seen this happen now, because there were a couple other shows that I just was madly in love with that got canceled, like Happen Leonard and Ash versus the Evil Dead. And I think, you know, similarly to Preacher and The Tick, they're the kind of stories that are, they're so, the shows are so strange and unique and specific. Mm-hmm. I interviewed Bruce Campbell, and he had said, you know, really getting 3 seasons of a show like that is a miracle these days. But, you know, I hope for more than that. Like, I just...
We need a network that does shows only like that. It's what we need.
That would be awesome.
Because I think I think the shows are there. I think that, you know, I know personally, like, I'm starting to write my own, now that I have a little time to breathe, and because of everything that's going on with the WGA and the ATA and not having my agent to rely on right now, I'm sort of focusing inward on what I want to write. And what I want to write is definitely in the same vein. You know, I want to stay in that, you know, unique storytelling with sort of a weird mix of genre in it. But for me, I want to, most of my career, I've written on very male-driven shows. Even if there have been female characters, the core of the shows have been male-driven. And as a female writer and nerd, I want those female characters too.
Yes, 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 please.
So that's what I'm developing on my, and I think there's a lot of us in the nerd sphere and the female nerd sphere who are like, yeah, no, let's do that. And that's sort of where I, as a creator, am going with my own work now. So we'll see what happens with that.
Well, anything I can do to help.
Texting me as I'm talking to you. Thank you. Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
I should pick your brain at some point.
More weird women stuff, because, you know, there's just not enough of, you know, not enough stories told by women or, you know, underrepresented people. Nope. We need more of that. Absolutely. Yep.
Absolutely. And I feel like, you know, in a lot of shows, especially within, you know, the geek, nerd, comic book, heart, whatever, any of these things, that there are female characters, but a lot of times they're part of a team. They're not the main character, but often they're some of the most interesting characters, you know, and I know that me, and I'm sure there's a bunch of other female writer creators out there who feel the same way, and I'm sure are working on similar projects, and there's some coming down the pike. But I think as we move forward and we show that, yeah, women play video games, women read comic books, women watch horror movies, women like superhero, like all of these things, that we're driving forces in that marketplace as well.
I can't believe anyone doesn't understand that women like those things. Like, it just seems to me, like,
I know.
I don't understand how you could possibly live in a world and think, like, oh, women like Star Wars? Like,
yeah, I know. We're politer, I think, but we're some of the most virulent fans, and we're not afraid to dress up, and we're not afraid to show our fandom and support really, like, strongly the things that we follow and love. And that's worth pursuing. It really is worth pursuing. And I'm not sure why there's not more of it. But I think coming down the pike, you know, if you look at things that are in development or things that, you know, they're coming. It's just hard, especially in the superhero, because it's so saturated. There has to be other ways to tell story. You know, one of the things I love about Preacher, it is a comic book. It's a comic book. He's a superhero, right? It's just not presented in your classic cape and cowl kind of way. So you're able to do this darkly realistic, weird-ass show, but it's still a superhero. But it doesn't get... like The Tick did, it doesn't get lumped into the glut of superhero stuff. So I think that's a way in for those of us who want to write female heroes or anti-heroes or any of those things, is to find a way to make them quote unquote superheroes, but hide the fact that you're kind of writing a comic book. That's my take. That's what I'm trying to do.
Okay.
No, no, this isn't, I'm not, this isn't a comic book hero. This is just a female hero. It's not that. Yeah. So, we'll see. I hope there's new stuff coming out soon for women outside of the Marvel universe, to be perfectly honest, and outside of the
right.
Star Wars universe. I would like to see,
right.
you know, I wish DC did a better job of exploiting their universe, you know, Dark Horse, all of those, you know, which is obviously part of DC, but I wish all of those would spend more time really focusing on female characters as leads of shows. You know, I thought the strongest in the Marvel on Netflix was Jessica Jones. So
yeah,
why aren't
me
we
too.
Doing more of that?
Me
you
too.
Know,
my
the other three were
Jessica
whatevs,
Jones
maybe.
And Luke Cage were like the
yeah,
two my two favorite
really
episodes.
Like, yeah. So, you know, it proved that you can have this sort of woman with a superpower in a world that's grounded-ish and still tell a remarkable story that men and women would write. Watch, excuse me.
And I love that also that, you know, she wasn't particularly nice. She's like,
yeah.
She was really
yeah.
difficult. You know?
Yeah. I always thought she could use a little more of a sense of humor, but that's just like, that's my voice and my style is I like my characters to be smart alecky and quirky
yeah.
and have a sense of humor.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's one of the things I love about Tulip is she's a bit of a smartass.
Oh, totally.
But, so yeah. So, you know, Miss Lynn has that
off.
Too.
Like...
yeah. Yeah. Whatever. You're a
yeah,
dick.
Just take any shit
Fuck
from
off.
Anybody. Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. And so I love that. You know, that was the only thing for me with Jessica Jones is like it's that thing with comic books and the darkness of it, which I love. I'm a huge Batman fan. Obviously, I'm Bat Dork, but there's a balance between dark and light. I think that is necessary in some shows now, unless you're going pure sunshine and light like we did on The Tick, and that's its own thing.
Yeah, it's completely its own thing. I mean, Ben Edlund is completely his own thing. It's like, I've been a fan of
yeah.
his, you know, writing for, you know, a decade.
Yeah.
And, like, every time, you know, he does an episode on, for, you know, when he was doing, like, a Supernatural or Angel or...
Yep.
They're always the
some of the best, right?
And, yeah, they're just brilliant. And you're like, how does he even get there? Like, what goes on in his brain?
He's got a crazy head, man. He's got a crazy head. He's just the way he comes at things is so uniquely him. And, you know, for me, like, when I first got the job, I was sitting in a room and it was the senior staff. It was me, Ben, it was first season, so David Fury, Jose Molina. We were sitting in a room and then Jose and David went down to the smoke or whatever. And I just was left in the room with Ben and I had this, like, fangirl, dorky, like, oh my God, I'm sitting in a room. And Edlund talking about The Tick. Like, this is just the craziest moment of my life. And, one of the things about Ben, beyond being just, like, creatively brilliant, is, like, he's also possibly one of the best human beings you'd ever meet. Just, like, a great, caring, warm, just a really good human. And, you know, people that... have had the amount of success he had in creating The Tick. So he was 17, you know, that young, and to have had this great career and this big blue thing that'll exist long after we're gone. You know, he's not a dick. Like
not at all.
He's the greatest, nicest guy, and he's accessible to fans and truly grateful and humble. So I feel pretty
it's
lucky to have gotten over to get to work with him. Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah,
he was,
you
know, like,
well,
I'm just
a one-trick
pony.
Yeah, he knows he's not. And he knows he's not. But you know what? He loves that pony, man. He loves that pony.
Loves
and
that
that's why
pony.
Every that's why every iteration of The Tick is so great, because it is his heart.
Yeah.
And it, you know, and I think it's reflected. I think it's very much reflected, especially in the second season, how much love there is. That world and those characters.
Yeah, because in the second season, everyone starts to be like, okay, this is who I am now. And everyone sort of accepts, you know, there's a moment where they're like, and then, you know, their family, their partner, their friends accept, like, okay, you know, like when Arthur's like, I'm in, and the Tick is like, yay, and then Dot's in, and there's a moment where it's like, well, okay.
Yeah, well, we heard feedback from fans last season, and it was hard. You know, part of the setup of the season was Arthur sort of, you know, classic hero's journey, you know, refusing the call. And, you know, that had been set up in the pilot, and you couldn't move him too fast to being, oh, okay, like everything I've always thought my entire life. Yeah, okay, I accept. Like, we couldn't do that. So it's sort of, we really wanted to start this season with Arthur fully on board. Like, we know fans wanted that. We really wanted that in terms of story. We didn't want to be held back by that. We wanted classic Tick and Arthur going on patrol and what weirdness happens in the city. We wanted our characters. We knew them now too, so we really wanted a season of them coming into their own and facing much more classic Tick villains and problems.
So, is there anything fans can do to help try to get the Tick to another network, or is that even on the table? Or is that a possibility?
It is on the table.
Or is it really?
Yeah, it's absolutely a possibility. I know, you know, Sony is our studio, and Sony has the rights to the Tick. And they've been a great, great partner for the show. And I know that we have been submitted to multiple other networks. I don't know the status of anything.
Okay.
I know we've been submitted that Sony's doing whatever they can to make it feel, you know, we're unfortunately, for a half hour of television, we're sort of an expensive little show, which is, you know, if we were just your sort of standard multicam, you know, half hour comedy, it's a different thing. But we are, because of the VFX in the show, we are slightly pricier than the average half hour. So it's going to be harder, I think, for us to find a home. And, you know, Sony's obviously working to make it as palatable and interesting to a new partner. So I don't know. I know we went out. I don't know the status of anything. You know, the fans being vocal with the hashtag Save the Tick, over social media, you know, the petition on change.org. I mean, all these things, at least, you know, for somebody who's a potential buyer who's looking to see if there's a fan base and an interest in more of the show, you know, these are things that they can, at their desk, you know, start looking up. I mean, if you search hashtag Save the Tick on Twitter, you know, you can see, you know, everybody who really is very adamant. Same on Reddit, same on, you know, Instagram and every place I don't go because I'm old, like 4chan, which I don't really get what that is, but I'm going to say it because somebody else said it. Yeah. And I think that's what it's called. But all we can do is be a vocal fandom and, you know, hope that if somebody's interested that, you know, fans being vocal and showing their support and saying that they'll continue to watch and support the show. I think that's really all we can do right now as the powers that be try to broker something and see what happens. You know, our actors' contracts do run out in June. So we definitely have a ticking clock in terms of, you know, a timetable, but, we still have time. So, it's after the holiday and, you know, all of Hollywood is gone last week, pretty much.
Sure.
There's a three day weekend. I'm just going to take the whole week. but now that everybody's back, I don't know, you know, things could happen, but you know, it's with any of these cases, it's always, you know, expect the worst and hope for the best. You know, it's,
I think
all of us that are involved in the show are very hopeful we can get more, but are also, you know, having to come to the reality that we have to start, you know, looking for, okay, well, if it doesn't happen, where are we going next? What are we doing next?
Right.
Which is
sad. Right.
Because
it's never about how great the show is. It doesn't, you know, it's not, those decisions are not made based on that.
No, I wish they were, because we'd have been picked up by every single network. But, you know, it's definitely, there's definitely a huge financial element and a huge, like, who do we fit, you know, and who wants to take the risk. And, so there's obviously a series of things that make people decide whether they're going to do it or not.
I'm going to commit to at least doing the hashtag twice a day on all my social media, and I will encourage other fans.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks. Yeah, I think it does make a difference.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
If it was a silent fandom,
if they're looking at
then
numbers,
nobody's going to be
interested. We can do that.
Yeah,
and to let people know it's a timeline, too.
Yeah, definitely. definitely. So we're, I think we just have to keep doing what we're doing. You know, I think Griffin and I and, you know, Josh, who plays Frank, have been very active in trying to keep it going and out there. And our fans have been absolutely just tremendous. So the support and the love has been really great. So whether the Tick lives or dies, you know, this version of it after this, I feel like we've put something out there that, you know, just brought people a lot of joy. So whatever happens, I take a lot of pride and personal happiness in knowing that.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what you can do with your creative processes. You know, you may do it the best you can, and then it goes out there, and it kind of lives its own life. You can't really control, you know, it at a certain point.
No.
So,
no.
Much
no,
as you'd like
no,
to.
But,
instead
boy.
Of a prince
who do I want to control things?
They're deciding to,
I know.
You know.
Yeah, well, that was much more organic than the Tick. So that's like, you know, it's sad as a fan, but, you know, I was really impressed because I went into the writer's room and it's a new writer's room. So that's always weird and intimidating. You're not quite sure what you're stepping into. And the discussion was coming from Sam, the creator and showrunner, about, you know, what story do we have to tell? What do we feel we want to still do from the comics? What do we feel the fans are going to want to still see from the comics? And, you know, we have this 10 episode season, you know, what else do we need? Do we need two seasons? Do we need, you know, how much story do we have? And then ultimately, you know, we looked at everything and it became pretty clear that we could do this pretty successfully in one season, and that to drag it out just felt wrong. And so,
right.
You know, it wasn't network or studio that ultimately said, you know, this should be when Preacher ends. It came from the creator. And I think that's such a great way to go out, because you get to go out on your terms, and you also get to know you're going out, so you get to write towards that.
Right. Nothing worse than just getting, you know, suddenly finding out, like Stand Against Evil.
Yep. Like,
you know, they leave it on cliffhanger, and then they get canceled, and the fans are just like, no, but wait.
I know. I mean, the amount of people, I've seen saying, so if you guys don't come back, will somebody tell us what's happening with Superion? And I will tell you a secret story that I promised people I would tell that I've told nowhere else about Bronze Star. So here's a little secret just for your podcast. So Bronze Star, people are like, what are his powers? What is going on? Why is Bronze Star? So Bronze Star appears first in my script in Blood and Cake. And I put him in because I had to have another, we needed to introduce another superhero. So I found the name that wasn't taken. I sort of liked the idea that it was like here in California, you know, you have them everywhere at every tourist place. Those guys, the human statues who are painted silver or gold or bronze or whatever.
Well.
And so I was like, I want him to be that. And I'm going to call him Bronze Star. And I put him in and always thought he was temporary. We'll take him out. We'll take him out. And we just never got around to taking him out and replacing him. And then we were casting him, and then we were putting him in. And then, you know, we fell in love with the character just because he just became this guy who was like, just everybody knows him. He's just like a good guy, you know? And when my other episode in 9, when we were like, we're forming the new Flag 5, we put him in, and Amazon and Sony said, they might get mad at me for telling people this, but what can they do now? They were like, no, I don't think we want Bronze Star in the Flag 5. And we're like, what? They're like, no, he just doesn't seem like he would be in the Flag 5. And Ben and I were like, oh, you know what? He's so going in the Flag 5. And we just were like, this character that was like supposed to go away and be replaced by like a real character, now is suddenly one that we love and that we're fighting for to be part of a superhero team. So Bronze Star is this crazy, weird dude who exists against the odds, but now lives forever in the Tick universe.
That's
just my crazy
so
Bronze
classic
Star story.
Ben Edlund too. Like, yeah, he's definitely going in now.
Yeah. Yeah, we were both like, we went dug in our heels. We're like, why would they say that about Bronze Star? He's such a nice guy. Like, and you know, our actor is great, and the kind of the makeup and the costume was so much fun. And it wasn't like an expensive superhero thing. It was just like, you know, he's got the bronze outfit on. Like, guys do it down at the summer here in Santa Monica.
Square or, you know.
Yeah. I mean, if, like, Orlando street performers can do that, yeah, they can afford to do that. We can certainly afford to do that. And so then we like, fell so much in love with him that we got offended and, like, dug in our heels. We're like, no, he's going in the flag five. Just the weird things that you get attached to. So there's Bronze Star. But
well,
I can't
you're
talk
darling,
about his power.
You know.
Oh, thank you. Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks.
So, you think you've given me, like, more than I need, but I'm going to try to put everything in because it's been an amazing conversation.
Whatever. I'm just happy to have the conversation. Thank you for letting me blah blah. I clearly like to blah blah. So, but no, it was great.
Writer.
Thank
writers
you so much
love
for
to tell stories.
We do, but most of us don't like to talk as much as some of us do. So, but yeah, no, it's been great, and I'm so passionate about. I mean, I loved Preacher, but of course, but you know, Tick is so personal to me, and my love of it and of Ben, that anything I can do to talk about how great an experience it was and to possibly save it, I'm going to do.
Yeah,
so I appreciate you giving me a platform to do that.
Yeah, we'll all, you know, I mean, I know Orlando Jones is on board too, and, you know, if Trolando can't, like, get the word out, nobody can.
Yeah, if he wants to tweet about us, I would be so incredibly grateful. Yeah, any name that has a lot of followers is always great. You know,
I know he's a big over the shipper.
Yeah, that's amazing.
So,
yeah, we could use all help from all quarters.
Yeah, the more of us. Yeah, all right. So, Fangirl Army to the rescue. We'll organize.
Awesome.
And,
appreciate it. It was awesome to talk to you.
You too, and like, please, like, you know, whenever you're, you know, if you're coming up with, you know, a new project and you're working on something, please, you know, shoot me a tweet or something and let me know, and I'd have
sure.
it back, and we could talk about whatever you're working
Great.
On, and, you know,
I'd love that.
I'd love to talk to more women in the industry and find out, like, and it's so nice that you're fighting for women in the writer's room and behind the scenes. I mean, that's so important, and, yeah, yay you.
Yeah, yay! I'm just grateful I have the opportunity to do it. To be perfectly honest, there's a lot of people who want to do this for a living, and a lot of women who want to do it. So I'm just grateful that I've had the opportunity to do it. So, yay!
And
yay,
you know,
ladies
yeah,
in the writer's
and,
room,
and you know, pass it down the line. You know, so it'll be a little easier for
Absolutely.
The next person. So,
I hope so. I hope so. I think it's getting there, but I hope it's going to continue
so.
In that direction. Yeah,
I think so. I think we're at a turning point, you know, with all the crazy stuff that's going on. I think, you know, women are going to start, you know, instead of fighting each other, fighting the patriarchy. And if we all came up for that, you know.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah,
I agree.
With our allies, you know, we're a formidable army.
Yep. As Ben Edlin and the Tick say, choose love.
Thanks for joining us this week on the Gurr in Fangirl. If you enjoyed our show, be sure to visit our website, www.squeeprojects.com, where you can subscribe to the podcast and our YouTube channel for lots more squee as fuck pop culture content.